welcome to the latest edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast, episode number 404. So we're rattling through these at the moment. We're also coming to you on Future Radio 107.8 FM. I am Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Davitt and Chris Lakey. It feels like we've got a lot to talk about this week. It feels like we've got a lot to talk about today, let alone this week. Of course, this week, football does return. Norwich City face Southampton at Carrow Road on Friday evening, behind closed doors. It's going to be, it feels to me now like everyone is just about ready for the return of football. But Paddy, let's start with you. There's only really one place I think we can start this week, and that is from the news that came out of Carrow Road on Saturday night, that one of the Norwich City players, who as of Tuesday is unnamed, has had a positive test for COVID-19, which obviously isn't good news on the week that Norwich City restart their Premier League campaign.
Absolutely not. No, you're right, Connor. And very alarming, both in terms of, well, less so in a footballing, sporting context, more so for the guy and his family. But since that announcement Saturday night, I mean, anybody who's unaware, what we have now is to facilitate football coming back at the Premier League level is twice weekly testing of 20 players, 20 clubs worth of squads, and coaching staff, and I'm assuming backroom staff as well. And we've had this rolling kind of publication of results, almost to, I guess, provide everybody with reassurance, both inside the game and outside, that what the Premier League are attempting to do is safe, or as much as it can be, really, in what is, as we all know now, because we're living it for month after month, a very, very evolving situation in terms of the virus and the spread of it. But yeah, of all the 1,000+ tests in the latest round, which were taken just prior to the weekend, there were two positive. One of them, it turns out, was Norwich. That was confirmed by the club themselves Saturday night. So, yeah, of course, straight away, very alarming, raises the potential. Have other players within the Norwich squad gone down with it? Saw one or two reports on social media, or one or two fans on social media questioning whether the Southampton game could go ahead. But where we are right now, as we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, is thanks to Stuart Webber, who's came out and basically confirmed that the club have done their own follow-up independent test. That's the key part of this. With said player, unidentified player, it is negative. So there'll be a third antibody test now, because it, without prejudging that test, it increasingly looks like maybe the player may have had the virus at some point, but isn't showing any symptoms now. Webber confirmed again, is healthy. The rest of the squad are healthy. So it thankfully feels like it's moving towards maybe a situation where, to apply the Premier League protocols, when he's self-isolated for the rest of this week, he will take another Premier League test, not the independent club test. And if that's negative, he will rejoin the group. So it looks like not quite as alarming as we all probably maybe feared when the news first broke on Saturday. But as you rightly say, against the backdrop of what the football in this country, professionally at the top level, is trying to achieve, it doesn't help matters, because there's obviously still a lot of resistance, I'm sure, in the wider public to elite level football coming back. But it is what it is. That sort of argument has already been debated, and we've moved on from that. And as I say, we will. Wednesday will be the next reports following the next round of testing, and that will confirm from the Premier League if there's been any more positive tests, and also if there's been any, because I'm sure Norwich would be quick to come out if there's any further positive tests around the rest of the Norwich squad. So at this stage, prior to the actual confirmation from the Premier League from the next round of testing, it does thankfully look like it's not going to be as serious as it potentially could have been. But as Stuart Webber himself said, he's done a podcast with an independent organisation earlier today. It does underline that they can take all the measures they think they can take and all the protocols, and you still are in danger of catching it. And that just underlines really the pervasiveness of this virus, doesn't it?
Well, this is it, isn't it? Because for all the talk of the so-called R rate, it's going to be one of the lowest in this part of the country, which probably makes it more interesting that a player has caught it. And if so, perhaps raises questions, if not internally, then certainly from a supporter's perspective about how that person then did catch it. I mean, Adrian Mariappa, who tested positive for Watford, said he essentially didn't leave his house and had no idea how he caught it. And I think many, perhaps this positive case at Norwich has certainly woken up a few in Norfolk about still the prevalence of this virus even now. Chris, let's bring you in then, because as Paddy said, and as Paddy alludes to, this next set of tests that have taken place probably yesterday is probably going to be quite pivotal for Norwich. And I suppose if there is a slight positive out of this, is that where clubs have had individual positive cases, we then haven't seen an outbreak in a squad, have we? So I suppose that perhaps is positive, but equally it's a significant set of results for the football club, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think Paddy's explained the whole thing there really, really well. It's sometimes difficult to get your head around these things and different tests. The fact that a City player tested positive on a Premier League test and then tested negative on a Norwich City test just would suggest to the doctor in me, and that's not much of it, that he's come out of the infection period. Again, like I said, not the doctor in me. But it also shows that the mystery that has surrounded coronavirus, COVID-19, since, was it January? That nobody knows the true extent of this virus, and football coming back is attempting to bypass that mystery a little bit, as is, you know, Primark opening, your petrol station opening, everything. You know, we're all trying to second guess it, and I don't think you can second guess it. The fact is that if there is one out of all the tests that Norwich City have undertaken since testing started, if they've had one positive test, which very quickly became a negative test, then I guess you're looking at that, and with your glass half full head on, you'd say that's pretty decent. Then you have your glass half empty head on that says, well, actually, it's not really, is it? Because one's too many. It's just we are all in the dark still. I find myself when I talk about this in relation to football, I find this dark cloud descending over me, which makes me worry like hell about it all. But I think we've put football into the context of everyday life. It probably looks a little bit different. What does worry me is that prospect, that very real prospect of there being another positive test within the same club, and then several. That's the fear that everybody would have, because that is the game changer. If one club does get several, then what do you do? Mm. You know, at the start of this football season, as we well know, Daniel Farke had a major injury crisis. It took a lot of his players out. This is different. This is altogether different. It has different consequences. If you were to play against a team who've lost three players to coronavirus, would you be happy? I'm not sure I would, really. Mm. It's just the mystery, isn't it? But, you know, I think two tests a week, and obviously Norwich City conducting their own tests on top. I guess all clubs are doing that. I think football is trying its hardest to just keep a lid on it all. Whether it's enough, I don't know. Again, I really do apologise for this black cloud that descends on me, because I want to see football back on Friday. I'm really excited about it. But it does have a big question mark next to it for me. But I don't think it's insurmountable.
I guess it's like anything else at the moment, isn't it? It's an element of risk, and it's almost that football has accepted that risk, isn't it, now? And I think that's perhaps maybe when you do see, maybe it's a bit different because obviously we cover Norwich City daily, so it feels a bit closer to home, maybe, this positive case than others. Yeah. Maybe that's what it is.
I tell you what football this has done is expose us to some facts that I never realised, and I've lost them now. I called it up on my email, but I actually have lost it. But I'm sure somewhere today I've read that footballers, that the contact during a game, you know, close quarters contact, is 15 minutes worth in a 90-minute football game. You know, so that is sort of similar to what you get out in the street, what you're allowed in the street. So close contact doesn't happen in football. Yeah, we all think it does, but most of the game is not spent in close contact. And if you've seen certain defenders in blue shirts around this region, you'll know that's very true. Sorry.
No comment.
I had to, Con. I had a black cloud. I had to lift it.
Well, it's always the best way to lift it, isn't it? there's another facet to this, which is that Norwich City obviously played Tottenham Hotspur in a behind-closed-doors friendly on Friday. The player in question played in that game. Spurs confirmed that. But both squads haven't gone into self-isolation for the reasons that the Lakers has just outlined in terms of the contact period. So is it going to be interesting to see, again, from a Spurs perspective, whether we see any positive cases crop up there, maybe?
I think that's absolutely true. Sorry, Paddy, I jumped in there, but I'm going to exit very quickly. I think that's absolutely true. That the one that everybody will be looking at will be Tottenham, because that, again, the new ball game. If they've got a couple of positive tests, then, you know, trouble. As you can see, I'm getting served coffee here by somebody who thinks that they can't be seen on camera. Sorry, I beg your pardon for jumping in, Paddy. You're yours.
I've been a bit out of the loop for reasons people probably might already know. But didn't Tottenham have a positive test somewhere down the line in one of these?
I think they did at the start. Yeah, I think it was close to the start, wasn't it? But I think it might have been a staff member rather than a player, if memory serves.
But to underline Lakers' point, after that, there wasn't obviously anything that we're aware of, anyway, publicly, that sort of constituted a wider issue at Tottenham. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure, as much as Tottenham were quite keen to put that statement out off the back of, you know, Norwich confirming that there was a player in that game last Friday, they felt that none of their players had really come into, as you explained there, the close contact, Public Health England 15-minute kind of exposure. I'm pretty sure they would still like the reassurance from this latest round of testing, which we believe is taking place over Monday and today, Tuesday, and then we'll get, hopefully, the Premier League will put the results out tomorrow, Wednesday. I'm sure if you're Jose Mourinho, particularly, you know, with a trip, is it at home to United or are they going to Manchester United Friday night?
I think they're at home. I will double check.
Yeah. But I mean, irrespective. But you would want, if you're Jose Mourinho, a clean bill of health. Because if not, as I say, it's one thing to have been going through these steps while they were coming back to training and initially in small groups, no contact. Now they've moved on to obviously the next phase, the contact and actually playing games like Norwich did against Tottenham. It's a completely different scenario now when we get into this cycle of actually playing Premier League games and we're starting to get, heaven forbid, higher numbers of players and staff having tested positive, because then there's a whole different set of questions are going to be asked about this. I'm sure even within football, there's probably a little bit of unease and uncertainty whether they could continue with this abbreviated season if there was another outbreak. You know, there's a lot of talk in society generally about a second wave, and if that was to transpire, and then inevitably football won't be immune from that. So, you know, I think there probably is a palpable sense of nobody quite knows where we're going with embarking down this path. The hope is that clearly they're doing as much as they can in terms of the medical framework they can put around the professional football in the Premier League, but there's still no guarantees. And of course, the Norwich test has underlined that. So, yeah, it's a very strange scenario. But, you know, they will look to the Bundesliga, and they're now, what are they now, 3 or 4 games in? It seems to have settled into consistency of product. You know, far from ideal, clearly, with no supporters in the stadium. But, you know, they seem to have reached a point where on and off the pitch, they're able to continue with the progress of their league, and the Premier League will hope to follow suit, won't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth noting as well, obviously, we're not going to speculate on the player, but also in relation to that Spurs friendly, the Norwich players did take a few separate coaches, I believe, so they could allow for social distancing on those. And of course, we've had all the public transport guidelines come in terms of face masks and stuff like that. So they'd have been following the procedures. So again, that might indicate why, again, more widely, Norwich's squad haven't had to self-isolate as a whole, and rather why this individual would have taken themselves out of it. And also, it's worth putting into perspective the numbers. I mean, you alluded to it there earlier on, but it is one of two cases out of 1,000, over 1,000, isn't it? I think over 1,200, just about. So there is some perspective to be had there as well. It's it's just how much, or I suppose what hinges on this next round of testing, because if there's another Norwich City player that tests positive or member of staff in the next round, then that does raise some more serious questions about this and perhaps about the effect that an infected player has, although we haven't seen that at any other clubs, so there's no reason to sort of suspect that it will happen here. Lakers, if you were another player inside that Norwich City dressing room, how would you feel at one of your colleagues who perhaps you had close contact with on the training pitch? Certainly in games, is your teammate wears the same colour shirt as you, etc. When they test positive the week of your first game, would that create for you some doubt, even sort of subconsciously, about perhaps the safety of it all?
I wouldn't hold it against him for a start. I think it's bound to. But saying that, when I go and I know the shops are open, but you ain't got a chance of dragging me out today. Social distancing remains for me, and not going into shops remains for me. But when you see the lengths that football will go to protect itself at the moment, the Premier League, you know, I would imagine the consequences of you failing to obey all the rules are huge. Imagine any club which was lax in observing the rules and being careful, to the extent that they had several players who tested positive, that they probably transferred it to other players, and suddenly the Premier League season's over. The financial implications for many, many, many people and football clubs would be huge, just because one club or even one person was a bit of a prat, frankly. You know, it's so big that I think every football club will have taken extreme measures to ensure that they don't pass it on. And if I was in a dressing room where a player had proved he was asymptomatic, but he tested positive, yeah, I would be concerned, but I would know that my football club, my employees, had taken every step, because they are, that's what they're doing. You know, let's not be cynical about this. Football has got to, it's leading away for a lot of people, and you can't mess it up by being lax. So I'd suggest, not having the luxury of being in a dressing room full of megastars and multi-million pound people, that they are working. You know, I'd say there is more of a surprise. I think that's been an element that's come out, that a lot of people, Elliot Bennett said the same. He was really surprised that he had tested positive. I guess his teammates are going to think, oh, I don't want to, I've got a family. But of course, I get the same feeling when I have to go and do my shop. I don't want to be anywhere near anybody. And I'd rather sit in a football club dressing room than go into Tesco's. Really would, yeah. Now. You could plonk me in the middle there and make me juggle the ball all day. That'd be much better than getting a tub of butter, mate.
Well, I suppose one element the football clubs and the football players have in their favour is the fact that they do get regularly tested. So, I suppose, unlike perhaps some of the cases that have been publicised and highlighted, most of the professional footballers that have caught COVID-19 have actually been asymptomatic, and the majority of them have, like you said there, have been like Elliot Bennett and been shocked that they've actually tested positive for it. So fingers crossed we don't see any more positive cases. But of course, as Paddy said, the next round of tests comes out tomorrow, so we await those with interest, that's for sure, from a Norwich City perspective. But we obviously wish the player well in his recovery. Obviously that's the main thing. Right, let's get on to some football talk then. Norwich City obviously resuming their season on Friday at Carrow Southampton. We'll preview that game shortly. I just wanted to come on to Andre Duda, because his loan extension, I think probably no surprise to anyone, Pad, he's come out himself and said that he's agreed to stay at Norwich City. What's your view on it? Because he's a player who made quite the impact on his debut, but hasn't quite followed up his performances since.
It's funny, because he was very good that day of his debut with Bournemouth. They won 1-0, which was the game where the Steve Cook, was it, got himself sent off handling an Andre Duda goal-bound. So he would have had probably a goal-scoring debut, and who knows, if that had kicked him on. At the minute, I'm going to hasten to use the name, but there's a very Stephen Naismith sort of curve to this, who was brilliant on his debut against Liverpool in that madcap 4-5 defeat when Jurgen Klopp ended up with broken glasses et al. And never remotely got anywhere near that level again. And I would say that Andre Duda is flattered to deceive. And of course, it's difficult because, as Daniel Farke said when he came in, you know, the problem he had coming in January, he had no time to acclimatise. He's come into it. Okay, he probably does speak a little bit of English, but completely new footballing culture, a new actual country as well. And maybe we didn't cut him enough slack, particularly when he looked so comfortable in that opening game. But I think that has been against him. But now he's had another, thick end of 3 months in England. I read in that article as well that he's literally just been holed up in his flat in Norwich. So he certainly should have acclimatised to his surroundings and, more importantly, his teammates, because he's had that. He's almost had that luxury, really, now of a block of time with no games, just to, more so obviously when they were allowed to come back to training, to just basically feel very comfortable in his surroundings. And you would hope that that would remove any elements of sort of that was holding him back in his performance levels, because there's no doubt, and again, I'll go back to what Daniel said when he came in, that if they'd have wanted to buy that lad on the back of what he did the previous season in the Bundesliga in terms of his goals and assists, you're talking a £20 million player. He's a Slovakian international. He's played in the finals of major championships. He's clearly got ability, and he was clearly an upgrade for me in terms of the players they were trying in that number 10 position. So if you were saying, OK, you needed to cut him a bit of slack, you needed time to adapt and acclimatise, for me, that excuse has now been removed. And we need to see the Andre Duda we hoped we were going to get when he came in January. And what I would say, the one takeaway from that interview he's done over in Poland, I think, is that if Hertha Berlin, his parent club, wanted him back, and he's said, no, I want to see it through here, that's a very positive sign for me. That tells me there's a player who's not just going through the motions. He wants to be here. He wants to put his shoulder to the wheel and hopefully play his part in keeping Norwich up. And I just think, I keep going back to that Bournemouth game, but the way he interacted with Cantwell, Wendia and Pukki, particularly Pukki now, who again, hopefully is fit and refreshed and over his injury problems, that quartet, who knows? Norwich need to win games if they're going to stand any chance now, and as sooner rather than the later in terms of the games they've got left to play. That quartet, if they fire, and Duda was a big part of that, then who knows? I think Norwich would carry more than enough at the top end of the pitch to worry teams like Southampton and Everton, who were the next two home games, obviously.
Absolutely. And just on that acclimatisation period, I mean, often with Daniel Farke, when he signs a player, we don't see him he doesn't tend to sort of chuck a player straight into the first team, does he? He tends to integrate them fairly slowly, whereas Duda was chucked in, and again, you've spoken about the debut there, and he did speak actually in that article that we were alluding to, which he done in with a Polish outlet. But essentially, he found adapting to life in England perhaps a little bit easier in terms of he could speak English before he arrived. When he moved to Germany to Hertha Berlin, he couldn't speak German. But it's interesting, isn't it, when the player comes in halfway through a season to a new league in a new dressing room. I just wonder how difficult that would have been for him. Chris, is there a what-if element? I mean, we can speak about Andre Duda a little bit individually, but in terms of Norwich City as a restart, they're going to be looking at Andre Duda, but equally, they're going to have centre-back options available now. And it just feels to me like, and again, it's because we haven't had football for so long, but the way supporters are thinking about Duda, and again, Tim Close, you can chuck into this bracket as well, there's kind of a what if they do it element. But those two games at Carrow, Southampton, Everton, they're going to be absolutely massive, aren't they?
Yep, they are. They're winnable games as well, which makes it a very frightening week, because if they do happen to win those games, and let's face it, you know, the odds are not with them, because they're, you know, it's obvious they've not done that this season. If they can win those two games, the pressure is on the other teams. Their backs will be up. You know, they'll be really up for this. They've got Manchester United, who I really think that's a very winnable quarterfinal. I did see in a Northern newspaper, Manchester United apparently have a very winnable quarterfinal against Norwich. Well, yeah, it's a level playing field. But, you know, they go into that really on the up if they can win those two games. If they can't, and a lot of what the resumption is about is between the ears, if they can't, it really is uphill. And I think the uphill, no, too much, too steep. You know, they've got to win those two games because there's this correlation between yourself and your rivals. If Villa, I mean, Villa, tomorrow night, the Villa game is huge for Norwich as well. I think you have to take every single ounce of motivation you can get. Villa lose, you've got Southampton, you've already got something to kick off on, you know. You mentioned about Tim Closer there. It'd be interesting to see if Daniel Farke just picks up where they left off. And to me, why should they? Because they weren't doing very well. They were losing. You know, this team is not winning football games or not winning sufficient games or winning at sufficient points. So to just sort of join it all together and as if nothing's happened and carry on with the same members of staff does seem probably wrong. I know he's a man who sticks by his principles, and I sort of admire him for that. But, you know, Norwich are in desperate need of points now. And there may be, now that he's got just, I think, has he got every player available? Is Sam Bowram available?
I think there's some doubt.
I think he isn't because he's got a good deputy there. But
yeah, I think there's some doubt over Zimmerman and Byram, isn't there? From what Farke has said previously, although
that's nothing compared to the problems he had in the first half of the season. So you know, he starts afresh pretty much with all the players there, and I think personally, I think he probably needs to just change it because the other system wasn't working. He's a manager, you know. He's very good at his job. He'll know best, but I don't know. I'd be a bit worried if I saw the same thing because it wasn't working. But I suppose it's better to see the same thing against Southampton and Everton than it would be against Manchester City and Liverpool. You know, because that really would. This running's pretty decent for Norwich. You know, yeah. I at the start of the season, I was really cheesed off that they were ending with Man City. I thought that was a kick in the teeth for a team that comes up that you have to finish against Man City. Now, could be over and done with by then, either way. But that first week, absolutely massive week. Three games, the first three games, but the first two league games, massive for Norwich.
Yeah, and by the time we get to the Emirates, we may well know what direction the season is going to go in terms of League and Cup, that's for sure. Paddy, it's an interesting one, isn't it, in terms of what Lakers has said there, because this is, I don't want to use the word unprecedented, but you can insert alternative in here. But it is such a unique situation that, in a way, for Daniel Farke makes it a bit difficult, because do you carry in perhaps the form of what we saw in March and the season before that, or do you actually start afresh and base it on training? If you're Daniel Farke, which way or which direction do you go? Because we know that he's a manager who's quite stubborn in terms of perhaps his formation, so to speak. He's very rigid with that 4-2-3-1, although from memory, now I think about it, I think he actually changed to a 3 at St Mary's, didn't he, in the reverse fixture of this, with Amadou dropping back from memory. So,
exactly.
I wonder if that's put him off a 3 at the back. But if you're Daniel Farke, which direction do you head in? Do you almost go clean slate, how you perform in training, etc., or do you actually take into consideration the form and the performances of players before the break?
He's always said that if I go back to the sort of the Moritz Leitner sort of omission mainly, but any player who's been on the outside, he's always took his reference from what they do in training. That and we know all the anecdotal evidence, they train ridiculously hard. Grant Hanley said he'd never seen anything like it until he arrived at Norwich with double and triple sessions. And Farke demands very high standards in training and that intensity and professionalism. So I think he will be placing a lot of store by what he's seen since they came back into first non-contact and now subsequently contact training in terms of these selections. And you would think, certainly with Tim Closer being available, that's a very tempting option to put it. The experience of that man, fit and fresh, bit of class about him as well on the ball, which is how Farke likes to build from the back, to put him in either as a 2 or as in a 3. And I'll go back to when we was in Germany pre-season, they played Schalke, and they said after that game that he was really, really quite keen to deploy the 3 just to shake it up. I think he saw it as Norwich, they can't not go into the Premier League and be predictable, because obviously it's an uphill task anyway in terms of their squad, largely unproven, a lot of young, inexperienced players or players from overseas who haven't played in the Premier League. And it was almost, he was inferring he wanted that element of surprise. And of course, that was denied him with the catalogue of injuries to the central defensive areas, to the extent where, I've written about it earlier today, that, you know, that Bournemouth away game, which they actually did draw 0-0, you ended up with Alex Tete, your partner in Ibrahim Hamadou in centre-back. No disrespect to either of those lads, but you know you're scraping the barrel if you've got to play them at centre-back in the Premier League. And so any desire to change it up formation-wise and play a three was totally denied Daniel Farke. That isn't the case now. And I just think that could alter the balance of the team in almost a transformative sense, you know, because you're then pushing, if you're playing with three central defenders, you're pushing Aarons, we'll say, and Jamal Lewis into more advanced wing-back roles. That's their natural game. I think they're better going forward than they are going the other way. It might allow him to do a little bit more in the centre of the park. Maybe, dare I say, you know, you're thinking they're not a Leitner or a Rancic could be accommodated because you've got that protection a bit more behind them. And then crucially, maybe at the top end of the pitch, we can take a bit of pressure off Timu and play maybe Dermot chinning around him or even Adam Eder if he really wanted to roll the dice. So I think we will see the three at some point. Whether we see it from kickoff against Southampton Friday night, not sure. Maybe Daniel will think there's so many variables around this game now and the whole backdrop to it. Do I need to be a bit more circumspect from the start? But if it isn't working, I think given the expanded amount of subs on the bench, given the expanded amount of changes he can make in a game, that all leads you to be far more proactive in the way you experiment within the game. And that's something he's been accused of not doing too often enough. And then he has been a bit too predictable, both in terms of his formation, starting lineup, and also how he uses his subs. So I think it's underrated that he has this pragmatic side to him. When he first came in, you know, we go way back to the start, 2017, that Millwall game, bit of a watershed moment. Maybe the pure sweet science that he wanted to play wasn't going to work in the Championship. He did adapt it. He brought Tete back into the fold. And we have at various points subsequently seen that pragmatic side to him. And I'd like to see it now, because what have they got to lose? They're 6 points adrift. The games are running out and pretty much everybody's written them off and they're going back to the Championship. So let's try something different. You know, what they were trying going into this elongated period wasn't working, and the league table doesn't lie this far into the season. So with more options available to him, why not change it and shake it up a little bit? But to bring right round, I think what we see against Southampton will be purely and simply a reflection of what he has seen on the training pitch, because he is very keen to reward what he feels is very good performances in training.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
It's an interesting point you make there about the pragmatism. I'm just thinking there was a point earlier this season, wasn't there, where he almost stuck with Tete and McLean, and it was very sort of shield the back four, essentially. That's your job. And if you remember the Newcastle game in August when I think it was Leitner and was it Tribal that day who played alongside him? I might be wrong. So that's a bit more of a ball playing too. I just wonder if he does revert to that three and it does open the door for someone like Mario Vrančić to sit alongside Tete. Or even Mo Leitner, who's a player that I want to ask you about, Pad, because he's been fairly active on social media in a positive sense with workouts and different elements on his story.
He likes his food, doesn't he? All his what do they call them, superfoods? He's well into that, isn't he? I'll see on his
I'm not sure I'd fancy one of the breakfasts, but there are a few things that he's posted that do look okay. But let's talk about Mo Leitner specifically. How much of him do you think we're going to see in the last nine games? We haven't seen him since Brighton away in the league, so it's been quite a long spell away. Do you get the sense that he's a player that Norwich will get a bit more out of in these last nine games, providing that I guess he's in the right place for it?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think his chances are increased exponentially by the fact that you can name more in the matchday squad and you can bring on more players into the pitch. It's quite clear, you know, Farker can play it down, but clearly that they haven't seen eye to eye, I think is the diplomatic way of putting that at various points this season. But there's no doubt in the guy has talent and, you know, there is a player in there, but I think it's quite clear to me now he needs to be accommodated with the right structure around him. You referenced that Newcastle game, him and Tribal. It might have worked when they were on the front foot at Carrow Road early part of the season. Mm-hmm. Momentum still with them. Newcastle, by contrast, were quite happy to concede ground that day, hit on the counter. That was perfect for them two type of players. But we have seen other games where it's a far more front foot, aggressive type of opponent. And those lads, West Ham away, actually, that springs to mind. They have to do a lot of work the other way, and that is not them. If you're relying on them to shore up a back four, it's only going to end one way. So, in the right environment, the right opponent, and the right system, I think Maurice Lightning could do a job. But you just feel from where he was in terms of the this season and where his sort of options were going in terms of first team exposure, it's hard to construct a case to say he will come straight back into the fold. But again, as I say, if he's able to include him on the bench and then the way a game develops, I don't think Farker is the pig-headed type of manager who would basically, if he's him and Maurice Lightner have maybe had a difference of opinion, he wouldn't turn to him and say, right, I need you in this game, go on and show us what you can do. I think, again, risk of repeating myself, he's very pragmatic, and if he thinks Maurice Lightner can offer him something in midfield that other players can't, I think we will see him. But I still think it's probably a long shot to expect him to come from where he was prior to the lockdown to now play a leading role. But certainly in and around the squad, yeah, why wouldn't you have him? Because, as I say, look at his pedigree. There is a player there, and he can do things in that Norwich midfield that not many other Norwich midfielders can do. So, yeah, why wouldn't you want that option on your bench?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I've been thinking about the midfield a little bit as we've been leading up to this Southampton game. It's probably been the area that I've looked at this season and probably gone, okay, that's probably where they're the weakest. I saw someone summarise Kenny McLean as, and maybe, I don't know if this is a compliment or perhaps a little bit negative in just saying that he's probably the most well-rounded Norwich City midfielder they have in terms of he does all of the elements well enough to keep him in the team ahead of someone like Mario Vrančić, who's very good technically, but perhaps leaves a lot to be desired defensively. So it's certainly going to be an interesting one with that midfield and how he kind of gets a balance in there. Is it just the case, Chris, maybe that they're just not good enough in that area? They don't have the quality in that area. I guess you could argue across the pitch, they're bottom of the league, aren't they? But it's specifically in that area of the pitch to perhaps get enough points to get themselves out of danger.
Probably not in the Premiership. I think in the Premier League, I think in the Championship, they probably have. McLean, you know, there's a bit of hot and cold about Kenny McLean. One week, people will be saying, you know, this guy's the dogs. The next week, he's the pits. There is a little bit of Marmite about him. Whenever I've watched him, which is not as much as you lads, I've always thought he's quite decent, to be absolutely honest. You were talking about Mo Lightner, or Paddy was. I keep going back to the back end of last season. I know that was the Championship, but it was Mario Vrančić who ultimately pushed it all over the line. And I just wonder if there's somebody going to rear their head over the last few games, nine games, and do the business, who will come back and will have reset themselves. We've got a couple of Pinkin specials coming out this week, and I asked that our pundits to say who would be the most important player. And I was quite surprised that not many of them went for Emi Buendia. Because to me, when he is on form, he is superb. He's a magnificent player. Everybody knows that. But, you know, he's sometimes sort of fallen a bit below the standard. His stats don't say that. His stats say they're all great. But this looks like a bloke to me, a player who could really reset himself and reset Norwich City. If anybody's going to do it, I feel that he might be the Mario Vrančić for this season. We talk about his pragmatism with Farker, and I just wonder if you ought to actually just say, look, you know, there's a goal scorer we know about. There's a great player in Buendia we know about. Let's just aim for their complete strengths And don't try and win the game, Mario Francic or Mo Leitner. You know, they're the two. You supply them. We're running the team around those two guys, or the top half of the team. You know, you probably see now why I'm not a football manager. But I just think Buendia's got so much to offer. He's such a good footballer. We know the defence, to be honest with you. I know they're sort of bottom of the table, but you look at that defence and wonder why, because there are some very good players in it. Those fullbacks, Paddy talks about Aarons and Lewis going forward. It's fantastic. I love watching them. Probably I love watching them more than if I were, you know, a diehard fan. It'd probably worry me more, but that defence looks all right. He's got plenty of options. Okay, if Zimmerman's probably carrying an injury, but even that, he's still got plenty of options. Grant Hanley, fine footballer. Ben Godfrey, great promising footballer with a couple of positions in him. Would he change that? I know we've had a couple of people suggest that Godfrey might just be shoved forward. I think that's probably a little bit more extreme. Tim Closer, that is huge to me. Tim Closer and Tim Krul are just such great people to have in your defence. You know, it crawls between the sticks, but Closer to me can do that job further out of just getting people to play. I just feel that experience, the head he's got on him, is so important. So, you know, if you go from Krul to Closer to Buendia and Pukki, there's your backbone. Suddenly, I've got Norwich City staying up. I'll have to rewrite a few stories now.
Well, this is it, isn't it? Because it kind of feels like the first time this season in, again, a bizarre sort of circumstance, obviously, that all of the elements that Daniel Farke's wanted to almost push Norwich City forward this season are actually available to him for the first time. And yeah, this is kind of a 9-game playoff, isn't it, essentially, for them. But when you do have Buendia and you do have Pukki and you do have Todd Cantwell and you do have four credible, genuine centre-back options fit and available, surely they've still got a chance, haven't they, Paddy? Maybe we're being too optimistic about this because of the 3-month hiatus without it. But there is an element, isn't there, that suddenly all of the components that perhaps he would have desired in August are suddenly available to him.
Yeah, and the only shame of it all, really, is there's 9 games left for Norwich. You know, if you had a, I don't know, 15 plus left, you could go into this period with a greater degree of confidence. But it is what it is. They're the cards they've got to play, and it's why we've already touched on it. The next two of that 9 game run are, for me, pivotal, really. Southampton home Friday, Everton here next midweek. I've got the table in front of me. Everton are 12th, got no chance of doing anything in terms of getting into the European positions. Southampton, well, they're 14th, probably got enough points. Yeah, 34 points already on the board. So really, probably another win or two, and they're safe. So they are your, for me, dictionary definition of two teams who might have had their buckets and spades at, and sadly they probably won't because they've already had 3 months off, well, 3 months without any football. But in terms of, do they have that really sharp mental edge because they've got things to go and achieve this season? Not for me. So if you're going to handpick two opponents at the minute, I think they'd be pretty near the top of my list. And with that in mind, Norwich simply have to get minimum 4 points and ideally 6. Anything less than that, they'll have 7 games left. They won't realistically have closed the gap to the teams above them. And I think they've got harder games ahead. So it is really, you could boil this down for me to the next 180 minutes to Carr Road. It's as big as that, really. And that's why all the options we're talking about, all the permutations, Daniel Farke needs to get them pulled together and permed in a way that they can hit the ground running. And, you know, should they do that, then, well, this time, probably, well, middle of next week onwards, things could look a lot more doable than they do at the minute. And then you can imagine, with Chris touched on it right at the start, you bounce into that Man United quarter-final, albeit behind closed doors with no fans, but on the back of 2 league wins, then you know, the semi-finals are not beyond the realms, are they? And the whole season has got a completely different slant on it, going into the defining end of it. So, yeah, their backs are against the wall, but they have a fighting chance. But they have to do it themselves. They cannot now rely on, you know, favours from anywhere else. If it's going to happen, it's got to happen from within that changing room. And there's certainly enough quality within that changing room. And enough, we saw it this time last year, togetherness and team spirit, that they can dredge results out. But really, there's no second chances now. It's now or never.
Yeah, there's an element of if not now, when. Is it going to work against them that they've got these two games straight away, Chris, that are so massive, so pivotal to their season? Or is it actually a massive opportunity? Because if and I'm thinking about it here, it's going to be everyone's coming in the same position. A lot of them haven't played a league match behind closed doors. Obviously, the Premier League teams have been playing friendlies, but they won't have experienced the intensity that perhaps a league game brings, the competitiveness of it. But equally, there's going to be no momentum. There's going to be no confidence within a camp. It's going to be sort of a level playing field to some extent, I guess. The only difference is that we've had pretty much what feels like a season before it, and we're kind of picking it up where we are picking it up. Is that something that works for them or works against them, do you think? The fact they've got these two massive games straight off the bat without any sort of momentum or confidence to go into it with?
Same for both teams. They've got more reason to win these games than their opponents, as Paddy said. They will be, if they win them both, there's a damn good chance they'll be playing for Norwich City in the Premier League next season. I can't see better motivation than that. That I think, Paddy, again, he said, you know, if you're going to pick a couple of teams, they'd be probably amongst the teams you'd select. And I think I would, add zero disrespect to them, although it is very disrespectful. I think this is, if I were a Norwich player, I'd be looking and saying, right, brilliant, bring it on, we're up for it. Now, okay, they haven't played for 3 months. Well, that's all down to now what's happened on the training ground in the last few weeks, how hard Daniel Farker has worked them, how well they've looked after themselves, how fit they are. And between the ears, absolutely between the ears. You know, you mentioned Duda, which is pretty good because he could easily have said, look, oh, we ain't got a chance. I want to go home. You know, they want me. I'm going, sorry, Daniel. I've got to go. They won't let me stay. But he's actually said, no. Come on, I'm going. I'm going to stay. I want to see this through. Because if he thought there was zero chance, a big fat zero, I think he'd be back in Berlin. But he's clearly of the mental gumption that says, we've got a chance. And I did write something recently that said, you know, when you sign a footballer, it's not what you see him do with his feet. A lot of it is his attitude, his mental strength, his experience, his loyalty, and all lots of little things that don't involve a football. So you sign the right type of person. And I sort of don't look and see many bad eggs in that Norwich squad. They all look pretty decent to me, pretty decent individuals. You know, you look around a few teams, everyone's got a bit of a wild boy in them. I don't see anybody in that squad that hasn't got the mental fortitude. I don't know them personally. They may be absolute nutters, who knows. But I do think that they look like they're of the right stuff. So, you know, again, I'm keeping them in the Premier League for another season. I probably shouldn't do that. But I think this is a good opportunity for them. And I think that you know, Daniel Farker should be looking and going, look, we could have been dealt a really horrible hand. And actually, this is not bad. You've got the opportunity. You know, just give it a go. I don't know what Paddy's doing with his cushion, but...
I'm multi-skilling, Chris. I'm actually putting some of our content on our Facebook page, mate. Got my laptop here. Not that anybody can.
Ever the professional.
I think this is a good reset point for Norwich. I do. Whether they can take advantage, I don't know. Because nobody's ever been in this situation like this before. So there's no telling how players will react to it. And I think if they don't do it, I don't think we should hang them out to dry. I think it's a hard basket call for them to go back in and play. It's not easy. It's not going to be easy playing in the circumstances. And it's not just empty stadiums. I've been in empty stadiums before. You know, it's the fans who will miss the other fans, not the players, I don't think. I think that's it. That's probably overcomeable, if there's such a word.
I think there's an element of it, isn't there, that it kind of, or certainly the case when I've watched German football, the strange bits are before, at half time when the whistle goes, and at the end, actually when the ball's in play and it's 11 v 11, it's a game of football. And so it kind of feels like there's an element of when that, as cliches is, when that whistle blows, that they're going to do their job, aren't they, regardless if there's fans there or not.
Don't forget, when that whistle blows, it's going to be really loud.
It's going to be really loud. Yeah, I'm going to put earplugs on. That might be the best way to do it. Paddy, just to focus on Southampton specifically, they've kind of, again, perhaps at an earlier stage, done kind of what Norwich City are trying to aim to do now, which is to drag themselves out of the relegation zone for a really good run of form, particularly when you look at that Leicester result they had earlier this season where they lost 9-0 at St Mary's. To recover from that and for Ralph Hasenhüttl to get them to where they've got to has been really impressive to watch.
I mean, really, that is the anomaly, isn't it? Because how many times would we have seen with that type of complete disintegration of a result, you know, that the manager is no longer his post? It's a credit to Southampton as a club, really, that they went beyond, you know, what was a truly awful result. You know, record equaling, was it, I think? Another certain team in blue got beat. We won't mention them, but... the embarrassment factor there, I think it was on Sky that night as well. In fact, I do recall seeing a bit of it because Maddison was doing his bits for Leicester, wasn't he? But and obviously at that point, you think, well, this is a team really hurtling towards the wrong end of the table. So am I right in saying, has he in the intervening period signed a new contract as well? You know,
new four-year deal. I think Craig Fleming has as well, and Dave Watson, who was at Norwich as well. So,
you know, it's a testament to him and his staff and then players, really, because, again, it's easy. I'm sure there was a lot of post-fallout from that game about have these players down tools. You always hear those sort of phrases, don't you know, cliches they clearly hadn't done. I'm trying to think where that result came in the timeline of when Norwich went there, because I think Norwich went there in December and there was a lot of pressure on the guy. It might not have been that far after Norwich went there.
I don't think they'd won at home at that point, have they? I think the Norwich result was the first time they'd won at St Mary's this season.
Coming back, we were there, weren't we, that night, and there was a palpable sense that there was a restless crowd, certainly. If they hadn't have turned up that night, and sadly for Norwich, they were very poor on set pieces and were punished by Danny Ings, I recall, particularly that night. And they got the result and they never looked back, you know. Looking at the table, they, as I say, probably a win away from being absolutely safe, and that will allow them to now rebuild again, and just as they have done over the five, ten years of their longevity in the Premier League. Very incremental. They've made some astute managerial appointments in that time, you know, namely Pochettino, of course, and Ronald Koeman was doing good things there, and then maybe Hasenhüttl, they feel is the guy who can take them on again. And if you're Norwich and you're looking at clubs in the Premier League you could maybe take bits from in terms of achieving that same longevity, you know, you go there now, St Mary's is a fantastic stadium, there's a community feel to that place, they've got a big support as well, you know, there's a lot of clubs who should look at a Southampton. I know they've spent a few quid, but they've been able to do that now because they've had the sustained revenue from the Premier League, and that we all would hope is where Norwich could get to in time. Whether they have to take a step back to come back again, time will tell in these intervening weeks. But he certainly looks to be a guy who has got the support of the people who matter at Southampton, and it won't be easy by any stretch of the imagination. But I just think, to reiterate what I was saying there a while ago, that you go looking down Southampton's squad list and they have decent players, but there's nothing there that should strike fear into the hearts of any of those Norwich opponents, and if Norwich play to their optimum, then there is a result there for them on Friday night.
And also be pointed out, Paddy, you mentioned about them losing heavily at home. When Norwich lost 7-1 at home to Colchester, the only team below them in League One, Southampton. Yeah. So they've come up. I suppose there's a case study there. There was a former chief executive who used to enjoy mentioning other clubs and say they're our role models. I think Charlton were once Norwich City's role model. I think Southampton have been Norwich City's role model. Well, they probably are now. They came up, you know, having been below the lowest, and look at them now. As you say, they're a fairly stable club, if there's such a thing as a stable club.
Well, it's funny you say that. I distinctly remember when Stuart Webber was unveiled as Norwich's new sporting director, that he actually identified Southampton as sort of the club he wanted to see Norwich. Recreate to an extent in terms of a prosperous academy and selling talent for big money. I mean, Luke Shaw comes to mind as one. Virgil van Dijk, of course, they sold for ridiculous money. So they've had a conveyor belt of talent. I guess their issue has been constantly year on year trying to replace the talent that they've lost.
Went to Liverpool.
Exactly, that went to Liverpool, yeah. Well, they have got a few Norwich City names, Angus Gunn, Nathan Redmond, Ryan Bertrand as well. They're quite a few Norwich City connections in there. It's just going to be interesting to see how they view this fixture because, as Paddy said earlier, they're one that sort of sits in mid-table and don't really have too much to play for beyond perhaps needing a win to secure safety. So they'll be looking to get that off the bat, certainly. So it's not one for Norwich to take lightly. But I think we better conclude it there. I guess I want to end really by asking you both how excited or nervous or whatever. How are you feeling about football's return? Now it is so close. Now it is coming this week. And obviously we hope to be there. Certainly a couple of us will be there, certainly. But Pat, how are you feeling about football's return? Does it feel like now it's the right time for it to come back?
Yeah, I'm probably conflicted, if I'm honest, mate. Yeah, I mean, it's not football as we know it because, you know, it's been proven now definitively. I think you watch them games from the Bundesliga and football without good-sized crowds and in the Premier League, more or less full houses every other week, certainly in Norwich, full houses. It isn't football. It's not the football we know and there'll be a hollowness to it, I think, when we either in the stadium itself Friday night or watching on the telly, that this isn't really the football that we all grew up with, the football that we all love. Football brings people together, but quite clearly that isn't going to be the case in this period. And it's almost a bridge to whatever comes next. And obviously that will be completely dependent on whether we can get a handle on this virus moving forward and obviously vaccines, because you know there's more than a minority within the game who probably feel that it might be behind closed doors for a long part of next season as well. And if that was to be the case, rather than just this abbreviated 9-10 game period, then you do fear for what football looks like beyond it and all the attendant financial fallout in terms of lowering down the pecking order with clubs who are heavily reliant on gate receipts. You take that revenue stream away, what does that leave? Norwich are fortunate in the sense that they are in the Premier League at the right time. They will have the revenue allied to the fact they were very prudent in how they were going about the task anyway. So they will be far better insulated than a lot of clubs. But I just feel it's where we are. If we want to get football back now, it has to be this way. That's where we are in all the other major leagues in Europe, and we will deal with that as and when. But it doesn't feel like the football we know and love, and I guess we all have to accept that that's the way it's got to be for the foreseeable future. But it will be nice though to actually see some football because it's felt a long period, and you do miss it. Obviously, with the caveat that, in the grand scheme of things, football and sport in general is fairly incidental. You know, people are going through so many tough times, both health-wise, financially, economically, and you know, football is a release. So in that regard, you know, millions will be able to sit down in their socially distanced homes and with their nearest and dearest and maybe just forget about things for a while. And from that point of view, football will be a very positive driver. But, you know, it isn't the football we know and love, and I think until we get back to that, then we basically just have to almost accept it is what it is. But I wouldn't probably say excitement, more curiosity at the minute, I think. Yeah, nobody quite knows how this is going to pan out. But as I say, you know, the German experiment is much further down the track, and they seem to have made it work in terms of at least fulfilling fixtures. And that feels really where we are at the minute. Obviously, we know there's huge carrots for Norwich in terms of staying up. There's the FA Cup as well, but you know, I'll paint you a picture. Norwich get to the FA Cup final, it's behind closed doors. You know, what is that? What sort of spectacle is that going to be? So everything has a bit of a hollowness to it to me, but we all understand the financial necessity. But I think also as well, there is an element that it does maybe alleviate some of the things we're all having to deal with at the minute, because it is that another signal that there is a world maybe down the line where we can get back to some degree of normality. And normality for us particularly, for a lot of people, is your football fix, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the most significant insignificant thing I think I've seen it described as, which is
most important and not important.
Yeah, exactly. Chris, let's give the final word to you then. You've been done a few of these with you now, and you've rightly been a little bit sceptical about football's return. But has your opinion shifted perhaps as we've got closer? I think I've seen a few people on social media that were very anti-football's return at the start now, and seem as it seems to be edging closer, actually sort of, I don't know, warm to the idea a little bit. Are you kind of the same with that, or are you still very much a little bit of scepticism?
There's apprehension. I just hope for everybody's sake that it goes well. I think it's an opportunity to just, there is a case of, look, just get this season done. But once it's done, once these huge telephone number figures are sorted, reset football. Because you've got a pyramid which has the extraordinary finances of the Premier League, and just a few divisions below has got teams who can't afford to play football behind closed doors. You know, we've seen a team, it is unusual, a team go bust, a club go bust this season in the Football League. Two divisions below, three divisions below, were they? Two divisions below the Premier League. The gap between that elite 20 and the rest, and the elite 20 is which every football team, every footballer who steps out aspires to play in, it shouldn't be that way. So, you know, without getting all silly about it, I think we know now there is a time to reset football and make sure that this brilliant sport of ours is free for all and available for all, that, you know, as far as we can go down, so that we never have a situation where clubs are really in danger. Kingston Town Football Club, remarkable success. They may get promoted, and it would be wonderful if they do. But ask them to play behind closed doors next season, and the owner is seriously thinking, wow, how are we going to do this? You know, and it shouldn't be. They're one step off the Football League. They shouldn't be like that. And, you know, let's get rid of the agent's fees. Let's get rid of this ridiculous amount of money that goes out of football. Not suggesting you get rid of agents. I think they're probably a necessary evil. But, you know, there is an awful lot of money that goes out. Let's use it wisely and have some good brains to work out how football should work across the board, from Old Trafford to Aylsham Rec. You know, that's what it is. It's a game for all of us. And, you know, I hope everybody gets their enjoyment out of the rest of the season and doesn't catch anything nasty, because, you know, heaven forbid that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hope we see some more footballers use their platform in a similar way to that Marcus Rashford has this week. Yeah. That's for sure. And also the wider extent of football as well. I think it's got to be questioned after all this is over. Gents, I think that just about wraps it up. Thank you both for joining me. Of course, this is your podcast as much as it is ours. So if you want to get in touch with us, you know where we are: Twitter, Facebook, email as well. And we will be back probably after the Southampton game, talking about that. Let's hope we're talking about free points and a positive start to life behind closed doors. I hope all of those out there can get some sort of enjoyment out of football's return and out of watching Norwich on the telly. It's not going to be the same, but at least it is football to some extent. It is football, and it is back. So stay safe, enjoy the football, and we'll see you very, very soon.